Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. Our COVID-19 coverage continues, this time sponsored by our friends at accreditation organization, the Compliance Team, which has been serving HME providers for more than 25 years. This episode is a special edition, and it's looking at how providers can gauge their risk and properly prepare when it comes to COVID-19. And risk assessment is an important component of this because not all providers are going to respond the same way. And here to talk about that effort is our longtime friend, Sandy Canale, founder and CEO of the Compliance Team. Sandy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. All working remote and dealing with the challenges of COVID-19 and how it impacts all of our businesses and especially working with our providers.
And Sandy, how are you guys liking the working remote situation? I for the audience, I'm coming live from my kitchen table.
Well, you know, a lot of it's interesting because a lot of the compliance team workers also work remote on a regular basis with doing our educational component for accreditation. So that part hasn't changed, but, you know, certainly not being out there in the field and evaluating on site is a different thing to deal with as an accreditor. But we find that, you know, we're calling each and every one of our customers to really assess what's happening with them individually with their businesses and how we can help. So it's all about education and keeping people on track and doing the right things to deal with this pandemic.
Right. Well, let's dive in there and get into a little bit of that education. Like I said at the top, you know, we're looking at risk assessment. So, how should providers assess their risk when it comes to COVID-19? I imagine, you know, not all providers are in the same boat and might have different sets of concerns.
Absolutely. And part of that risk, one of the things we need to focus in on is what matters most to the provider, you know, protecting themselves, protecting their staff, protecting their patients, and preventing the spread. So that's all part of risk assessment and looking at their what they have in their policies currently for infection control, for emergency preparedness, and certainly the training of all their personnel. One of the things in their risk assessment that they really need to zero in on is determining what staffing levels they have necessary to operate, you know, depending on their levels of risk.
Mm-hmm.
And the training of each individual staff as it relates to that risk and who's essential and who's non-essential. So where it really becomes important and paramount to the preventing the spread of infection is identifying not only what patient population you serve, but how you're serving them. So are you still having your patients come into your store? You know, let's start there for a retail operation that, you know, whether they do braces or maybe they do CPAP and CPAP supplies, are they having people come in the store? Certainly, if they are, that risk has just increased.
Ah, I gotcha.
So what should they do to prevent the spread, you know, to that patient that's coming into the store as well as their staff?
Got it. So environment is key. So it's kind of you kind of look at this as sort of the modality of business or care that's being provided. You know, like whether it's in the store or I imagine whether it's a delivery.
Oh, no question. And you know, the fact that okay, let's take that example of somebody coming into your store, or do you have things in place that prevent that? So let's walk that down the road a bit, if you would. Mrs. McGillicuddy calls and says she, you know, she wants to come in to pick up her brace, or she wants to come in because she needs CPAP supplies or whatever. Number one, it really is in the DME's best interest to screen whoever is calling prior to them coming in the store, if they're allowing people in the store at all.
Oh.
If it's something that, you know, okay, you know, it's easier if they come out and do like a curbside kind of pickup, and, you know, they protect themselves as well as, you know, they're handing over the bag, and maybe they can't do instruction there, but they do instruction via an iPad or whatever to their patients, or the patient is able to access the manufacturer for how to get a proper fit, and then they can talk to their provider over the phone and walk them through it. You know, these are all ways to help even the lower risk provider, you know, prevent the spread of infection. So it's key to try to do those things, to try to keep the patient out of the store.
So going back, you mentioned screening, and I thought that was interesting. What's involved in, so if somebody's, you know, thinking about coming to the store, you know, what are the sorts of, you know, kind of questions that are, you know, kind of legitimate and are still going to, you know, ensure good customer relationships and good patient care, but at the same time, you know, effectively screen that patient?
Well, I think the number one thing is to ask if that patient knows if they've been exposed to anybody else that has had COVID-19. And whether or not, you know, it used to be the focus was on travel outside of the U.S., and now not so much because we've got such a prevalence here in the U.S., I would ask the question, have they traveled to any other state, you know, in particular hotspots like New York or New Jersey, California, Washington, so forth and so on. I think that's key to ask if any of their family members or if they're symptomatic in any way with, you know, a fever or cough, sore throat, anything like that. I mean, you really want to take these measures so you don't, again, expose your staff to a potential somebody that, you know, either has COVID-19 or could be carrying it because they've been exposed and maybe they're not symptomatic.
Going back to the store, you had mentioned, you know, that curbside pickup might be an option. Are there other things that the provider can do to kind of protect the, you know, patients and other customers at the store as well as the staff?
Well, certainly shipping the item is also, you know, I'd say curbside pickup, but certainly if they're shipping out the brace or you know, the CPAP supplies or whatever, that's another method. You know, the other thing is if they decide that, no, they want somebody to come in the store, well, then they need to maintain that social distancing even if they're trying to serve the customer within that store. You know, it's really interesting when you talk about the power of social distancing with one person within 5 days can infect 2.5 people if they're within that 6-foot spacing, we're closer than that. And in 30 days, it could be 406 people that are infected. You know, when you reduce it by 50%, in that 5-day period, you only have 1.25 people infected, and in 30 days, 15, and then it obviously goes down from there. But it reinforces the need for that distancing, for personal protective equipment. You may not need an N95 mask, but, you know, having one of the cloth masks just because you know, number one, if you're in that 6 foot distancing, you're not going to be near the droplets from the patient if they do cough or whatever. So, you know, how, you know, it gets transmitted is through those droplets, and maybe they put their hand to their mouth to cough and then they touch something and then you touch that. So, you know, having that social distancing is really key.
Sandy, let's get back to mail order. You you know, if mail order is an option, what are the sorts of things that providers can do there to ensure that, one, the patient's going to have a satisfactory experience, you know, with like issues like setup and that kind of stuff, and two, how does a provider do it safely? You know, I don't even know if there's safety concerns or anything like that that go into, you know, say picking and packing orders and stuff like that. But take me through it.
So I think first and foremost, you know, no matter what type of patient they have, and it goes for the staff as well, is concentrating on hand hygiene for whoever is, you know, putting the supplies together or whatever. It is so important for them to wash their hands and do it for the 20 seconds. You know, they laugh with, you can sing happy, you know, 20 seconds is longer than what you think. So, you know, people have counted or sing happy birthday or the alphabet song, but, you know, it's really important, as well as utilizing the alcohol-based gel. So if they can't get alcohol-based gel, then, you know, just concentrate on good old soap and water for, you know, before and after handling things that they're going to put in a box and ship out. And, you know, again, utilizing good hand hygiene and keeping that social distancing, even if they're a mail order, from one another. You know, the employees need to be distant from each other with how they're, you know, putting things together in the box to ship out.
Yeah, that's not always easy, is it? Kind of creating warehouse procedures that minimize infection.
No question. Because again, I think people automatically think, well, this is, you know, easy, you know, I'm not with the patient, you know, I'm not at risk at all. Well, at this point in time, everybody's at risk.
Yeah.
So you may be in the warehouse doing this with Joe, who, you know, could be carrying it and you don't know it because Joe is not symptomatic. So that's where it gets into everybody doing hand hygiene and maintaining the distance, as well as, you know, cleaning and disinfecting any surfaces that you're working on at the work environment, in the warehouse, whatever. And you want to make sure that you're utilizing disinfectants that are EPA registered and approved, and things like bleach and Lysol and, you know, just about all the disinfectants that we're aware of in the DME industry are all registered and approved. You just need to make sure that you're following manufacturer guidelines, once again, with how long you keep it on the surface before you wipe it down. The other thing I'd like to make mention of is a low-risk provider, such as somebody doing mail order. What happens if Mrs. Jones sends back that CPAP or her brace or whatever that she's clearly taken out of the bag and tried to put on and maybe it didn't fit or whatever, and then sends it back to the provider? Well, now the provider's risk, although was low, has now increased because now you're talking about dirty, contaminated equipment as opposed to new and unused. So what should they do? All right. They should certainly clean and disinfect, you know, while wearing gloves, and segregate this piece of equipment, what, you know, letting the wet time and so forth. Now, the only time I would quarantine that piece of equipment or anything like that is if somebody said, oh, you know, Mrs. Jones tested positive for COVID, or that patient was sick and symptomatic with symptoms that sounded like it could be, then, you know, just as a matter of precaution, I would put that equipment aside. Again, clean it, you know, normally with those type of disinfectants, bag it, and then put it aside for that 14-day period. But for the most part, you're gonna kill those germs with the bleach and water, with the type of disinfectants that we talked about. But it's just important for the listeners to know, if something comes back in, you've got to handle it differently.
Gotcha. And then, so now let's talk about another modality, and that is deliveries, because that's an interesting one, because it's almost like, one, you've got all the stuff, you know, like just like it's going out, you know, for like the mail order, for the shipping that we just that we talked about. But then it's also kind of like a mini retail environment on wheels, you know, or a storefront, or whatever you want to call it. You know, depending on the business model, what are the, you know, procedures that a provider wants to take when it comes to their deliveries?
So, again, depending on what type of product they're utilizing, but home care delivery obviously is higher risk than what we just talked about. So clearly, one of the first things you're going to do is do that screening over the phone before you deliver.
Mm-hmm.
Has anything changed with Mrs. Smith that would, you know, make you think, oh, okay, we have to be extra cautious? You know, use that hand hygiene, use gloves if you're touching equipment, and, you know, use a mask if you're entering the patient's home and coming anywhere close to that patient within that 6 foot. Now, the other thing, you know, if you're picking up, you're going to bag that equipment. I would even use curbside cleaning before you take it back into your store, doing that appropriately.
Ah.
But the other thing I'd like to mention is, suppose it's somebody that typically gets home care delivery, like an oxygen patient, that they themselves are at higher risk. One of the things you certainly want to make sure is that piece of equipment, that oxygen concentrator, is up to date with maintenance, so that you don't need to go out there more often than absolutely necessary. Give them extra supplies, give them extra portables. So again, it's all about reducing the amount of time that you are exposed or potentially exposed.
Tell me this, I imagine that this is where accreditation really ties into this, because that's one of the things that if you're a Medicare accredited provider, you have to be tracking anyway, right?
Absolutely. And staying up to date with preventive maintenance and so forth. And I think during these times, people mistakenly think that something like that isn't as important. Oh, okay, it was due last month, and because I've got less staff and so forth, you know, maybe I can't, you know, adhere to those schedules. But you've got to think of it from another perspective. You have to think of that piece of equipment going out there and then breaking down and making your staff more at risk, because you've got to go back out there, pick it up, and replace it.
Mm.
Or repair it in the patient's home, which again is increasing the staff's risk because of the length of time that they're actually in the home.
Now, are there other things that the delivery staff need to be doing?
Well, absolutely. And I think the most important thing after they drop off or whatever and they go back is follow-up, is talking to their patients over the phone. So they have, you know, a real number one, they continue that customer service and maintain that relationship, but ensuring that they're using things correctly so they don't have to go back out. So these are important customer satisfaction related things that directly relate to keeping the home care providers safe as well.
So, Sandy, I'm curious. So is Medicare accreditation set up for this? In other words, are there policies and procedures that are, you know, part of the accreditation process that are designed to minimize the spread of infectious diseases? Or is this something that you might see, you might see additional procedures get added, as sort of like a, you know, in case of this event, then providers should be doing, you know, Y actions. I'm kind of curious where, the state of accreditation is at, you know, right now. You know, was it prepared for something like a pandemic? Or if it's not, or even if it is, do you think that it might be tweaked in the future, like that CMS might have future requirements that they want to see added to accreditation programs?
Well, accreditation is very much part of this, but accreditation of a provider is only as good as what the provider does with it. So if they've continued, you know, their processes, their policies, reviewing, you know, everything in the event of any kind of disaster where they have a backup plan. It's called good management, management of your business, management of your customers. If they have that mindset, accreditation is going to help them better prepare for whatever comes down the pike. Yes, they have, you know, they're able to do a risk assessment. Yes, they have infection control practices that they already had in place, but maybe they didn't need to use them to this degree. They had emergency preparedness, but everybody thought about fire safety and tornadoes and snowstorms and hurricanes. Nobody thought of this kind of emergency. But guess what? The same thing applies. You're doing the same thing in that assessment, in that, you know, understanding of how do you prevent disruption of service to your patients. And accreditation definitely helps you prepare for that, for anything.
Got it. Do you think that this event, you know, COVID-19, do you think this might change accreditation, standards and the practices and procedures that accrediting organizations such as the compliance team build into their accreditation programs?
I think it can only be enhanced. The basics are there. And again, I've got to stress one of the other things that really is the cornerstone behind being prepared is utilizing quality improvement. Because if you're continually looking at how your operation is doing things, looking at it from the perspective of areas in need of improvement, you don't want to be doing that during a pandemic.
Makes sense. Makes absolute sense. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, really, people, you know, they blow off quality improvement. Like, okay, we only need a few hours a week on quality improvement. Quality improvement and risk management is what it's all about. And if you don't do a good job at that, guess what? You're not going to do a good job during any kind of emergency, let alone a national public health crisis.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of Aesop's The Ant and the Grasshopper, right? You got to be working now for the bad times up ahead.
Absolutely.
So, Sandy, so we've talked a little bit about how this might impact accreditation. I'm curious, I want to get your take. How do you think that COVID-19 is going to impact the industry? You know, what is HME going to look like when all is said and done with COVID-19? Are we going to see a different looking industry, or is it going to look pretty much the same? Do you think providers are going to change the way that they do business, or what's going to look like?
I think one of the golden opportunities here is in the utilization of telehealth and the importance of that, you know, during regular, you know, what, you know, your norm, if we ever get back to any kind of what we thought of was a norm. Certainly I worry about the number of small businesses and their ability to rise to the occasion. But there again, you know, it's about adapting. It's about improvising. You know, if you're able to do that during this period, certainly you're going to continue on. Maybe your business is going to be, and I would think that businesses will improve because of this, because of the fact that they've had to look at maybe something that they weren't looking at before, with how they're truly handling infection control and emergency preparedness. So the next hurricane or whatever the disaster, certainly not at this magnitude, but nonetheless, it's something that impacts their business. Guess what? They're going to be ready because they got through this. So there again, the strong will survive.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, certainly the most prepared, right? strongest business plan.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Sandy, thank you so much for providing this information. And but you guys have even more information happening. You guys have been hosting some webinars and posting some things up on your website. Where can providers find out more? Give the compliance team address, if you could.
So, yeah, they can access our website, www.thecomplianceteam.org, and we post every webinar that is coming up. And just so you know, every Thursday at 2 p.m. East Coast time, we hold a webinar. One week it may be on DemiPost, the next week it may be pharmacy. We will do it until this pandemic is over, because I truly, it's for everybody. It's not about just the compliance team customers. It's about us all working together as a healthcare community to help prevent the spread and help each other, you know, help our families and stay safe. The one thing I'd like to end with is how I end each webinar is, every red light eventually turns green.
I love it. All right. Well, Sandy, we'll cap it off with that. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Sandy Canale of the compliance team for all the point-by-point info on risk assessment and steps providers can take during COVID-19. That's really terrific information. Thanks, Sandy. You can find out more about the compliance team and those various educational offerings that they're providing, like those webinars Sandy mentioned, during COVID-19 at thecomplianceteam.org. Again, that's thecomplianceteam.org. And while this will close things up for this episode, you can expect our COVID-19 coverage to continue. In fact, a couple weeks ago, we launched a special solution center on our website for COVID-19. That collects all of our coverage on the pandemic, as well as all our interviews on the topic, et cetera. And you can find that at hme-business.com and click the COVID-19 button in the Trending Now section at the top of the page. Again, that's hme-business.com. And don't forget to to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, like COVID-19, make sure to check out hme-business.com, like I mentioned, and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can find us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Post-Acute News on Twitter. And if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me. I'm at Post-Acute News on Twitter, or you can hit me up via email at DKO, P as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105media.com. All right. Thank you all very much for listening. The HME industry has gone through a lot, so I'm convinced we're going to get through COVID-19, and we'll do everything we can to help you get there. Until then, goodbye until our next HMEB podcast.